You're listening to The Oddscast, the original UFC betting podcast that's straight to the point. Hosted by leading MMA oddsmaker Nick Kalikas and MMA journalist Brian Heminger, they provide you the absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting. MMAoddsbreaker.com. Don't place your wagers without us.
Welcome to the Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on ESPN2 event, which takes place in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley lost 1.35 units on his free bet for UFC on ESPN plus 6 on Davison Figueiredo at minus a 135 odds. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC on ESPN2 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on ESPN plus and ESPN this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on ESPN Plus is a bantamweight fight between Alex Perez, who is 21-5, and Mark De La Rosa, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Perez opened minus 185, the comeback on De La Rosa at plus 145. We're right now looking over at our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu, currently at betdsi. We are looking at Perez at minus 335, the comeback on De La Rosa at plus 255. So needless to say, the action coming in on the favorite Perez here in this spot. A lot of people throw him in parlays as well. And a lot of people disrespecting De La Rosa in this spot as well. I mean, you know what? You take away the Perez performance in his last fight against Benavidez, and I think this is all justified, and even the line is justified. But let's backtrack a little bit. This is at 135 pounds, and that fight was obviously at 125 pounds. And honestly, Benavidez made Perez look terrible in that fight. I was shocked how bad. Now, again, the circumstances of that fight, head clashes, all sorts of stuff. I mean, it was an odd performance by Perez. I was expecting way more from him, and it was disappointing, to tell you the truth. But again, he fought one of the best fighters in flyweight history and one of the best, you know, bantamweights at one point as well in Benavidez. So I get it. I understand it. Not a bad loss. I'm not saying that, but still a head scratcher the way that fight kind of played out for me in Perez. So that's sitting in the back of my head, and I kind of can't get over that a little bit. Whereas De La Rosa, the last couple of performances have actually been pretty good. Now, again, not Benavidez type of fighters. I mean, he fought Joby Sanchez and Elias Garcia. So two solid wins for him against, you know, lower level competitors than Perez just faced, but still, I mean, getting back on track after that loss to Elliott and you know, getting some confidence in the UFC and with the skill set that De La Rosa has, I think he's going to be game in this fight against Perez as well. So this is going to be probably a closer fight than the odds indicate. And right now where the current betting line is, it's definitely a dog or pass situation. But it's a tough one because I do think Perez probably has enough to get it done here. And it's more so the control factor, the aggression. I think even though he's moving up to 135 pounds, both these guys obviously have fought at 125 before as well. So the size isn't going to be that much different. I think they're going to be basically around the same size. I actually think Perez is going to be a little bit stronger than De La Rosa in this spot. And I think he's going to have the better wrestling here as well. So I think it's going to be a very competitive fight back and forth a little bit, but Perez's control and power is going to be the difference here. And I think he can potentially maybe find a spot on the ground to finish, but more so than not, he probably grinds out a 29-28 decision type of win over De La Rosa. So where the line is now, dog or pass. So if you're betting the favorite in Perez, I mean, look for a prop if it's available. I would not recommend throwing in even a parlay right now at this spot where the line is currently right now. So that said, I'm going to pick Perez to win it though, because I think he does edge this fight out.
Yeah, both these guys are pretty talented, and while they both can make 125, I think it's to Perez's benefit that they're both fighting at 135. De La Rosa is really not that big, and Perez had a little bit more weight to cut, so I think that he's actually getting off easy since these guys are fighting in the bantamweight division right now. You know, Perez looked like an absolute monster when he was on the Contender Series, and then with those quick wins he picked up over Jose Torres, who, you know, was a top prospect. And man, that fight against Joe Benavidez did not go well. But I do think that I think it got set up a little bit with that the head collision, and maybe that made him look a lot worse. But we're going to find out here because Margaret De La Rosa, you know, he's definitely no slouch. You know, the guy has decent striking, decent submissions, pretty good on the ground. The main issue though is that Perez is just a little bit bigger and stronger. And I think that he can bully him on the feet. I think Perez can bully him on the ground. I think Perez has the better wrestling of the two as well. I just think that he's the superior fighter here, and Perez should get the job done. I don't know if he'll get a stoppage victory because De La Rosa is talented and should be able to put up some decent defense, but I just think Perez sets the tone the whole fight and is the aggressor for the most part and at least sways the judges, if not finds a stoppage along the way. So Perez is my pick. Now, moving down to the women's flyweight division, we have Marina Moroz, who is 8-3, taking on Sabina Matzo, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Matzo opened up -175. The comeback on Moroz at +135. Right now, over at BetDSI, we are seeing Matzo at -150. The comeback on Moroz at +120. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming into this fight. A little bit more action coming in the dog's way, and that's a little surprising, I guess, because Matzo is the one that's definitely the more hyped fighter coming into her UFC debut here. I mean, she's the one that has a highlight reel knockouts available on YouTube. She's the LFA warrior that people are talking about, you know, I mean, with all the backing and hype around her performances on the LFA and on some of those regional shows that she's been in and training at, obviously, King's MMA and the surrounding training partner she has. So there's a lot of high expectations coming in for Matzo here, and rightfully so. I mean, the girl's fun to watch fight. Obviously, she is a finisher, capable of finishing on the feet. That's definitely her best attribute is a striking. She's long for the weight class. She knows how to utilize that length and the skill with her technical skill set on the feet as well. So she's fun to watch striking. And she, again, for not really being a really thick, strong looking fighter with that frame, she does have a little bit underrated knockout power. And again, with her kicks that get mixed in the flow, I mean, she's capable of ending it with a head kick as well, if she's proven in the past. So a lot to like about Matzo in this spot. But that said, Moroz, I think, is going to be probably the toughest person she's faced. Obviously, Moroz coming in off of a little bit of a long layoff here, and she's been out a little bit over a year. But I mean, if you look at Rose's track record, she's definitely faced the better competition coming off of a loss, a competitive, but, you know, unanimous decision loss to Angela Hill. And then before that, the former champion Esparza. I mean, she's been in there with girls that are going to push her, that are going to outstrike her as well, and just tougher matchups in general for her. So I think here she's going to actually match up fairly well with Matzo. I know that the best path to victory, obviously, for Matzo, or for, I should say, for Moroz in this spot, is probably getting Matzo to the ground and trying to work her submission skills. Because I think that's still where Matzo has to develop a little bit, is her ground game. Now, her ground awareness isn't bad, but I think, again, that's where Moroz is going to have the biggest advantage in this fight. Now, can Moroz get the fight to the ground? Her wrestling is not really that great, and Matzo has shown decent takedown defense thus far. But again, that's an area she needs to be tested a little bit more, I think, personally. So this fight probably stays standing on the feet for quite a while, and if that's the case, I have to lean a little bit more towards Matzo because I think she's going to be scoring a little bit more effectively. But I wouldn't be surprised if Moroz actually pushes the higher pace, pushes forward a little bit, and tries to back Matzo up against a cage and maybe look for a takedown or two, and could sway the judges in close competitive rounds like that as well. So what I'm trying to say is this is going to be an interesting fight. This is going to be a close fight. For me, it has a split decision type of fight written all over it because I think Matzo is definitely capable of outstriking Moroz, but I don't think she's capable of honestly knocking her out. I don't see that happening in this spot, but I do think Moroz could push a high enough pace to make this fight a close competitive fight. So I would not lay the chalk in this fight here. I think it's a dog or pass situation for sure here with Moroz. With that said, I still have to, again, as far as a pure pick goes, I think Matzo is capable of outpointing her, and I think she probably edges this one out in the cards again as well. So split decision type of fight in favor of Matzo for me on the cards. But as far as the dog value goes, I think you have to look at Moroz. It's a dog or pass situation here. I would not lay the chalk on Matzo. If she gets through Moroz and she looks good doing so, then obviously she's on the right path, and, you know, there's going to be better things ahead for Matzo. But this is a stern test for her, and I'm not so sure she could pass it quite yet. So I'll pick her to win, but let's see how this plays out.
And I think Matzo will pass this test a little bit more convincingly than Nick thinks, but I think that's more because I think that she rises to the occasion. I mean, she is just 21 years old, and I think she's growing every time we see her. Maybe some of the faults that were in her fights just even two or three fights ago. I mean, she could be a completely different fighter at this point. I mean, Matsu is tremendously talented. I mean, she has very impressive striking game, very good kicks, obviously. She's athletic. She has some power. And what's, I think, most important is she's a flyweight. You know, Marina Moroz, she is a strawweight that's just moving up to the flyweight division because she hasn't fought in 13 months and had a broken foot. Moroz, I mean, she had an incredible UFC debut. I mean, I will never forget it, being able to destroy Joanne Calderwood the way that she did, especially because Calderwood, you know, she's gone on and looks like she could be a threat at 125 right now. But since then, Moroz has really just not been that impressive. She really hasn't. You know, especially most recently, those losses to Carla Esparza and Angela Hill. You know, she got out-wrestled in one, out-struck in the other. And I just am not as much of a believer in her as I used to be. I just don't think that she pushes a good enough tempo on the feet. I think she gets outworked. I think that she gets outworked on the ground as well, unless she can pull off an armbar. So I think here, while Matsu, you know, still is in the learning process, and as Nick mentioned, maybe Moroz is the most talented fighter she's ever faced. Matsu should still definitely have a size and strength advantage, a big power advantage. And I think that she'll gain confidence as this fight goes on because Moroz really doesn't threaten with a lot of power. I don't think Matsu is going to, you know, feel the sting of what Moroz is throwing at her. And I think Matsu will gain confidence as this fight goes on. And I think that she runs away with it by the end of the fight. So if Matsu doesn't get a stoppage, I think she at least wins a decision. So my pick's going to be Sabina Matsu. Now, moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Ray Borg, who is 11-3, taking on Casey Kenney, who is 11-1-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Borg opened -350, the comeback on Kenny at +250. Right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is actually Borg at -300, the comeback around +230 for Kenny. So line margins have tightened up a little bit as well. This is a pretty good fight, obviously. I mean, Kenny stepping in on short notice after an impressive, impressive win in LFA. I mean, this guy just became the first double champ in LFA history. So that's a background with Kenny. I mean, he was the flyweight champion and he stepped in on short notice and he ended up taking the bantamweight crown as well. So this guy, we all know him. I mean, if the diehards do, at least he was on the Dana White contender series. He's fought again in LFA, Tachi fights. I mean, this guy's been, even though he's not an old man or by any means, I mean, he's only 28 years old, but he's been around the block for a while and he's been on the prospect list for a while as well. So, I mean, Kenny is definitely a well put together fighter. He's got power. I mean, as far as the striking realm goes, he could beat you with his boxing. He could mix in some good kicks. He's got well-timed knees. I mean, you could ask Vincent Cachero in his last fight about his well-timed knees. Just everything that you like to see. I mean, he's got finishing ability on the feet. He's got the ability to wrestle. He's got the ability to scramble and submit people on the ground, and he's got really good jiu-jitsu to go along with it. So Kenny is a very well put together, like I said, fighter, and he's dangerous in all aspects. Now he's stepping up again at 135 for this fight, taking this fight on short notice, even though he just came off of he didn't really get tested in that Cachero fight. So he ended up winning it in less than 2 minutes. So he was already obviously in somewhat a decent shape going into that fight. And, you know, so he's stepping in on short notice here, but again, he's a game fighter. He's going to, I don't think the conditioning is going to be too much of a factor here against Borg. But that said, Borg is going to be the factor here because Borg is such a tough out. So what Kenny's going to have to avoid here is what Borg does best. I know Borg is actually getting better on the feet. He's hanging in there and his striking is actually looking pretty decent. But the best attribute of Borg's game, we all know, is his ground game. I mean, the guy has decent wrestling. Even if you put Borg on his back, he usually doesn't stay there too long. He's able to scramble out, get position on you. And then it's a thing of beauty to watch Borg operate on the ground. So the guy is definitely one of the best ground practitioners in all of the UFC. And that's what Kenny's facing here. So he's stepping up on short notice when he knows the type of matchup he's going to have to face here is a guy that's going to look to wrestle, going to look to take him to the ground, and he doesn't even have to do that right away. I mean, the striking, again, will be pretty competitive, but the longer Borg stays on the feet, I think the more chances it's going to give Kenny to maybe land something and get the job done there. If Kenny can sprawl and brawl here, I think that's going to be his path to victory. He can maybe possibly outpoint Borg and you know, steal one on the cards, a very close decision. If this does hit the scorecards, make no mistake, it will be a very competitive decision, but I think still Borg probably edges this out because of the ground attributes that he has that I just mentioned. I think it's just too big of a discrepancy on the ground with Borg. So I think Kenny's going to be game, and he's going to be one to watch out for, even if he loses this fight here in the future. And I'm glad the UFC finally brought him over because he deserves to be on this roster, whether it was the flyweight division or the bantamweight division. I mean, Kenny's definitely capable of competing amongst the best. So glad he's here, but I do think it's kind of going to be a tough matchup against Borg. At the betting window, though, it's still tough. I wouldn't lay – with all the personal issues that Borg has going on in his life, I mean, we know he's, you know, heavily invested with his child that's been through all those personal issues with his brain. And, I mean, you know, I don't want to get in all the details there, but, I mean, he's put it out there on social media. So, I mean, credit to Borg for actually battling through some of that mental stress that comes along with being a parent and having your child in that sort of position. So what I'm trying to say is I'm not sure – exactly what mental state Borg is at right now. I mean, he seems like he's taking everything well. And, you know, he's obviously seems like he's a very strong mentally sound guy as well. So it might not affect him all that bad, but I think that is a flag that you have to kind of consider as well. So how focused will he be in on this fight? So with that said, I'm still going to pick him to win, but I just wouldn't lay that chalk again against Kenny. He's more than capable of coming in here and just putting on a show as well and maybe overperforming against a guy like Borg. So we'll see. It's Borg the pick for me, but be careful again if you're betting this, because laying 3-1 chalk over Kenny is probably not a smart idea.
Yeah, Kenny's the third opponent that Borg's had, and stepping in on in extremely short notice, especially considering the guy just fought a week ago. But, I mean, yeah, he only fought for a minute and 38 seconds, ended up winning with a beautiful knee knockout against Vince Cachero. So, as Nick said, it wasn't really much of a test, but he was tested before that. Kenny is a guy that can go the distance, so I don't think conditioning will be a huge issue for him because he is coming off of a long fight camp and had a short fight. So as long as he's fully healthy, Kenny should be able to push a pace because, I mean, this guy before that, you know, 98-second win that he had three decision wins in a row in LFA, including a 5-round decision. So this guy can go, and he can fight at 125 or 135, similar to Borg. So I don't think that there'll be too much of a size difference in this bout. The main thing is, you know, Borg's missed weight a couple times. He's had some issues with cutting weight, and this being at 135 is probably to his benefit. More than Kenny's, even though Kenny just won a bantamweight title in his last fight. You know, this should be a fun fight. I think Kenny will push a good pace, and I think that he'll be dangerous, but the main issue here is, that he is getting no time to prepare for a guy that literally was in his last fight, fought for the UFC flyweight title. And Borg's still just 25 years old. Like, he is a fighter that definitely is getting better every time we see him. He's definitely improved his striking. His ground game has always been extremely legitimate. And I really feel like he's getting more and more well-rounded every time we see him, especially since he's been at Greg Jackson's. And the main issue with Borg is that he hasn't fought since that loss to Demetrius Johnson, where Johnson had one of the greatest submissions in MMA history, with that, like, suplex into an armbar. That's definitely something to be considered about, but I'm not expecting Borg to be rusty because, you know, he is so young and athletic and talented, and I think that he'll have added enough to his game that he's going to be real dangerous. And Kenny, I think, Kenny is very talented, Casey Kenny is, but I just don't think he's ready for this level of threat that he's facing. I mean, it's just too much too soon, too early in his UFC career. I think Kenny will have a nice career, and I think that he'll stick around for a while in the UFC and pick up some quality wins, but this is definitely a tough way to get started. So I expect Borg to get the job done at some point, whether it's by decision or potentially submission. Now, moving on to the preliminary card on ESPN, In the middleweight division, we have Kevin Holland, who is 14-4, taking on Gerald Meerschaert, who is 28-10. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Holland open minus 265, Meerschaert plus 185. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing Holland currently at minus 195, the comeback plus 155 on Meerschaert. So more action coming in Meerschaert's way. Not really that surprised, I guess, because stylistically how this matches up is Meerschaert has a big edge on the ground over Holland, and Holland obviously has a huge edge on the feet against Meerschaert. So it's kind of your classic versus, you know, striker versus grappler battle here that we get once in a while that we mentioned. But obviously these days there's not really, I mean, more so these guys are well-rounded than anything else. But make no mistake, Meerschaert, his best attribute, again, is on the ground. He clearly has an advantage over most fighters on the ground. I mean, he's got really slick jiu-jitsu, and he's capable of finishing fights that way as well. Now, Holland, on the other hand, is capable of battering people on the feet. He's got length. He's got power. He's got precision, obviously, as well. His ground game is what hinders him still a little bit, and I think that's obviously why, again, the early action came in on Meerschaert, because if Meerschaert can get Holland to the ground, then he can definitely give him fits and possibly even finish this fight. Now, Holland, he's more than just a striker. He does have a ground game in his own right. And if he gets stop position on the ground, he can deliver some ground and pound, and he's capable of submitting people as well. So I'm not saying Holland's a fish out of water on the ground, but I'm saying, I mean, out of the two, there's definitely an edge that goes to Meerschaert on the ground. But on the feet, again, completely the other way around. I've been honestly disappointed in Meerschaert's performance, especially standing against some of these fighters that he's faced, because, I mean, you expect a little bit more from him, and he's just been getting picked apart and just destroyed in many ways. So I think, I mean, he's tough, but he's going to get picked apart even more so against Holland on the feet here. I think, especially from what we've seen lately from Meerschaert, I don't know. It just, he seems a little bit off. And again, maybe that's not fair to say, but I think here the momentum is definitely on Holland's side. And I think if he can sprawl and brawl and even at least survive a little bit underground, he's going to be able to turn things around, even if he gets in a tough spot and just batter Meerschaert and probably finish him. So I honestly think that Holland, I'm more confident in him right now. I like what I see, and I think he's the type of fighter that can definitely improve fight by fight as well, and he knows what he's going to have to face here in Meerschaert. So I think he can survive, even if he gets a little bit tricky at times on the ground against Meerschaert, and get to a position where he can start unloading and possibly do some damage and put Meerschaert out. So I guess I've lost some faith in Meerschaert after his last few performances. Again, maybe not fair to say, but and I still have a little bit more faith in Holland. So I'm going to pick Holland. I think I understand why the action came in that way, but I think as the line drops a little bit more, it's probably a favorite or pass situation. Because like I said, I think Holland will do enough to probably make life miserable for Meerschaert along the way. So the pick is Holland. And again, if this drop continues to happen where you're seeing this line just get to about a buck 50 or so, then I think there's going to be a play on Holland as well.
Yeah, Gerald Meerschaert, I mean, he's a guy that is so inconsistent. I mean, sometimes he looks great and is able to just carve through people. And then other times, I mean, he's the punching bag. He was definitely on the receiving end of it in his last fight. I mean, that was as bad as I've ever seen him look. It was also as good as I've ever seen Hermanson look. But still, you know, he was just getting obliterated in the first round. And then ended up getting finished. So, before that though, you know, he faced a really dangerous fighter in Oscar Piahota and he ends up submitting him. So it's just tough to get a bead on Meerschaert because he's capable of getting these finishes and then he's capable of getting destroyed. Like when he couldn't take down Thiago Santos, you knew that that was the beginning of the end, or the second Santos got back up, that Santos was going to light him up on the feet. And the same thing happened with Hermanson. Like the second Meerschaert wasn't able to effectively get out off of his back, then you knew that it was just a matter of time for something bad happened to him. So this time around against Holland, Meerschaert, I mean, if he can get this fight to the floor, if he can put Holland on his back, if he can work his submission game, he's going to be on easy street because Holland is really only dangerous in the stand-up portion. I mean, he's got strong kickboxing, good power, good pace, good defense. I mean, just everything in terms of striking, he has a big edge against Meerschaert. But Holland also only has 55% takedown defense. So even though Meerschaert isn't the greatest wrestler, if he can just get inside get inside, close the distance, get a hold of Holland and drag him to the floor, then he's got a good chance of getting top position and going to work in terms of that. So I'm definitely concerned about Holland being put on his back, but man, Mearshart looked so bad in his last fight. It's tough to get that out of your head. And a lot of times UFC is a what have you done for me lately sport. And even though Mearshart looked good in his two fights before that against Piahota and Spicely, that really just putrid performance is, you know, stinging me a little bit. And I do feel like if Holland can keep it upright, then he's definitely going to get the win. It's just, will he be able to keep it upright and will he be able to get back to his feet if he can't? If that happens, if Mearshart gets him down and Holland isn't able to get back up, then Mearshart's probably going to win by submission because he has 20 submissions out of his 28 career victories. So clearly, you know, submission is his game. But if Holland can keep this fight upright, I think Holland can light Mearshart up because Mearshart really isn't that great of a striker on the feet. I mean, he's got a little bit of power. He is capable, but clearly not an advanced elite type of striker. So I'm going to side with Kevin Holland, but I'm not crazy confident about it because of, you know, he just doesn't quite have amazing takedown defense, and Mearshart potentially could exploit that. But Holland is still going to be my pick, reluctantly. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Enrique Barzola, who is 16-3-1, taking on Kevin Aguilar, who is 15-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Aguilar opened minus 165, Barzola plus 125. Right now over at BetDSI, we are seeing Barzola minus 120, the comeback minus 110 on the other side. So you are seeing Barzola now the favorites. The line did flip, more action coming in Barzola's way. Not really that surprised. I mean, Barzola has been the, I guess, the more dependable, solid fighters thus far that's gotten better fight by fight. I mean, you can see the improvements since he won the Ultimate Fighter, which was obviously a feather in his cap to begin with. I mean, coming, you know, off of the questionable loss to Bochniak and then just rolling through pretty much everybody else, and he's faced decent competition along the way. Been pretty impressive, man. I mean, his win over Davis in his last fight, the one that sticks out to me also is his win over Benitez. I mean, those are two quality wins. So Barzola is the type of fighter that gets better. He's getting a little bit better in his striking. He does have some power. He's known for his grinding style. He's got good ground and pound, top position as well. So he's becoming a force to deal with. I mean, the pace that he pushes, he's tough as nails as well. Hard to get out of there, good cardio, everything about him. So the guy, again, continues to improve, and it's good to see. Because I think at age 29, he's kind of getting into his prime right now with all the experience he's getting. He's never been at an all-time high in confidence, mentally, physically. Everything's kind of coming into play for him here. So he's a very tough out. But a lot of the same could be said with Aguilar as well. I know he hasn't had the experience in the UFC thus far as the likes of as a guy like Barzola. But that said, he still has had decent competition outside of the UFC. Another one of these guys that's come over from Legacy, from LFA, from the Access TV fights. Shows that, I mean, those fighters, obviously the UFC scoops those guys up big time because, you know, the champions end up becoming players in the UFC, rightfully so. So this is another guy here that you're seeing in Aguilar that's faced decent competition throughout his career, that's ready for the UFC. That's why he came in and fought a very game fighter in Rick Glenn in his debut and won an impressive decision. So, I mean, these guys are really going to be in a very competitive fight that's going to go back and forth and really challenge each other. I mean, this is a great matchup, and it's a tough one to pick. That's why I think, like I said, the action coming in on Barzola as a dog, and now it kind of settling at a pick. I understand it because I think it is going to be a pick-em type of fight. And it's a hard one for me to call as well because both guys have tremendous momentum coming into this fight. I realistically think it could go either way. I'm going to lean slightly a little bit more towards Barzola because I think the pace that he pushes and the pressure that he's going to put on Aguilar will probably edge him out, but it's not a confident pick at all. Again, what I've seen from Aguilar and the improvements he's made, his boxing's legit. He definitely has underrated power in his hands. His wrestling has gotten to the point where he's got really good takedown defense. He can sprawl brawl and usually batter his opponents. So I don't think he's going to have as much success as he typically does against Barzola because the way Barzola fights, but I still think he's going to be in there. And like I said, it's going to be a war. It'll be a back and forth fight. Looking forward to it a lot. So That said, slight lean towards Barzola, but not a confident one. So I'll check out the weigh-ins. And again, this could be my disclaimer spot. Make sure you guys all check out MMAOddsBreaker.com on fight day, because usually we post our staff picks and that's where our final selections are going to be. So just in case after weigh-ins, I change my mind about this fight, I might go Aguilar, but for right now, I'm going to lean Barzola. I think, again, he just edges one out on the scorecards, which I think is going to be a very exciting fight.
This fight honestly has the potential to be one of the better ones on the entire card. Barzola and Aguilar are both very talented. Both can be aggressive. Aguilar especially impressed me in that UFC debut. I really thought that Rick Glenn was going to be too much for him too soon, and he definitely passed that test with flying colors. He looked great. I mean, he's exciting. He pushes a high pace, and he really goes for it in terms of throwing big strikes. Barzola, on the other hand, he's somebody that I have really come to respect. I mean, he's had a pretty impressive UFC career so far. What's kind of funny is his one loss that kind of stands out to me was against Bochniak, and that one could have gone either way, and it probably could have and should have gone to Barzola, but Bochniak won that fight because he was being crazy aggressive and winging shots. And even if they weren't all landing, he was just convincing the judges that he was doing more. And that's something that maybe could happen in this fight because, Barzola and Aguilar are about the same size, but Aguilar does have a reach advantage on Barzola, and he's going to be aggressive. Aguilar is going to be swinging. He's going to be doing it for 15 straight minutes, and Barzola's either going to have to keep up with him or he's going to have to land some really good counter shots and potentially some takedowns because Aguilar is powerful and aggressive, and that could be enough to sway the judges. So that does scare me a little bit, but I really feel like Barzola has improved his striking technique, and he could punish Aguilar if Aguilar is really winging those big shots at him and being a little too reckless. And Barzola does have the wrestling to fall back on. He hasn't been using it quite as much lately since he's really started to fall in love with the improvements in his striking. But if he does fall back on it, I think that it'll be to his advantage. So I think Barzola can hang on the feet, but Aguilar's aggression could convince the judges. But if Barzola mixes in the takedowns, I think that he can win this fight. So I'm going to side with Barzola by decision. Now, moving on to the lightweight division, we have Ross Pearson, who is 20-15, taking on Dez Green, who is 21-8. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Green open minus 365, Pearson at plus 255. Right now, we're seeing more of the same. The favorite getting bet up a little bit, minus 450 right now for Green. And the comeback on Pearson is at plus 330. So line margins have tightened up and more action coming in Green's way. Don't blame people. I mean, honestly, I know that it's a high spot considering Desmond Green doesn't have an impressive record thus far in the UFC. And Pearson has accomplished a lot throughout his career. But, I mean, let's face it here. It is what it is. Pearson's basically a foot out the door here. I mean, no disrespect intended because he's, like I said, he's been a tremendous fighter on the UFC roster for many years, facing a lot of hype. Little opponents and doing really well against most of them, but his best days are behind him. And Desmond Green at least has something to prove still, even though he hasn't, again, hasn't performed to the best of his abilities. He's had some tough fights so far as well in the UFC. I think the UFC's kind of giving him a bone here. Now, it's not going to be an easy bone because Pearson has showed us in the past, even though I think he's a decline fighter, if you don't get him out of there, I mean, the guy's going to be everything you want. I mean, everything you don't want, really. I mean, as far as the fighting goes, as far as the scorecards go. I mean, Pearson is the type of fighter that can definitely still outbox you. His defense is actually pretty good, even though he is a bit chinny. And of course, he has decent takedown defense. But I think that's going to be the deciding factor here is the ability that I think Green can actually strike with him all right on the feet. Green's striking has improved big time. I wish he had a little bit more pure knockout power. That's the shame with Green. I think he can outpoint and outstrike a lot of opponents these days. But that one punch knockout power is still missing from his game. And I mean, again, that's going to eventually cost him because I think he already in ways it's hindered him a little bit. But that said, he could still outpoint Pearson. It'll be a competitive striking battle back and forth, even if he doesn't knock Pearson out here. But I think the deciding factor will be Green taking Pearson's back, making this an ugly type of fight, getting him against the cage, trying to take him down, probably has success at getting him down at times as well. And with that said, Green probably comes away with grinding him out and winning on the scorecard. So I think I could see a clear unanimous decision type of fight for Green here, or even a potential stoppage. I know Green doesn't finish a lot of fights, but these days against Pearson in this spot here, maybe he can land a big one. Maybe he can get it to the ground and do some damage there as well. Maybe he can do it. So I wouldn't be shocked if Green does get the finish before it hits the scorecards. But if it does hit the cards, I think we're going to see a 30-27 type of decision win for Green here. Even though, again, a lot of times Pearson is game, and maybe I'm, you know, kind of not giving him enough credit here, what he's done as of late, but I still think this is a good spot for Green to keep his job on the roster. And then Pearson, like I said, he's kind of has one foot out the door, in my opinion, right now. So this fight was geared towards Green, and I think he's going to get it done. So the pick is Green, and I agree with the way everybody's been betting this thing as well.
Yeah, my main issue here is that Ross Pearson is clearly on a decline. I mean, at one point he was a guy that was at least among the contenders in the lightweight division, but you know, that was a long time ago. Ross Pearson since then has really had a tough go of it. I mean, he's lost 6 of his last 8 fights. He's been getting finished in fights. You know, he clearly is nearing the end of his run in the UFC. I mean, if he was anybody else, you know, other than maybe a tough winner, a popular fighter out of the UK, then he might have been gone already. But Des Green, on the other hand, he's had a rough go of it just in terms of opponents. I mean, he has been in there against some seriously tough dudes. And the fact that he's still in the UFC speaks volumes because, you know, he's been able to handle himself all right. I mean, granted, he's only 2-3 in the UFC, but, he's beat Josh Emmett, who is a very talented fighter that's fighting later on in the card. We'll get to him. He beat Gleison Tebow. And then his losses, I mean, his losses are to some nasty dudes. Rustam Khabibov, Michel Prezeris, Mirbek Taisimov. Those are all guys that have been, ranked fighters. So, I think like Des Green, I mean, as long as he pushes a good pace, I think he can even potentially outstrike Pearson at this point, just because Pearson has lost a step. His chin's not as good. He's a little bit overprotective now. He's not nearly as aggressive as he was when he was at his peak, and really, believing in his power. You know, Pearson really just doesn't quite throw with those same fight, finishing intentions. And he's been in some wars. So, I think against Des Green, I think Green will hold his own on the feet, potentially could even beat Pearson on the feet, just because Pearson isn't quite as aggressive as he used to be. And, I think Green definitely has the edge if this fight goes to the floor. Green is the superior wrestler, and if he can get top position, steal a round or two, he's going to be in really good shape. So I'm going to side with Des Green. I think that he still has a lot more left in the tank than Ross Pearson, and I think Green gets the win. To the women's strawweight division for the preliminary card headlining bout, we have Jessica Aguilar, who is 20-7. Taking on Marina Rodriguez, who is 10-0-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Rodriguez opened -335, the comeback in Aguilar +245. Right now, what you're seeing over BetDSI is Rodriguez at -345, the comeback +265 in Aguilar. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Another tough one. I mean, Aguilar taking this fight on short notice, so we got to point that out right away. Obviously, in my opinion, Aguilar throughout her career is by far levels above and beyond the talent of Rodriguez. I mean, just the, you know, what she's accomplished. At one point, obviously, Aguilar was one of the best fighters in the world. There's no question. One of the best female fighters in the world. No question about that. But again, we're talking about declined fighters, and that's exactly where we are with Jessie Aguilar. She is not the same fighter she was a couple years back, and it's a shame she finally made it over to the UFC when she wasn't in her prime, because I think she would have fared a lot better. But what you get in Jessica Aguilar, again, is a very complete fighter. She's tough as nails. She's been in there with the best in the world. She has a great wrestling background where she's able to get the takedowns. She could actually outpoint you and outbox you on the feet as well. So she's not out of her realm at all on the feet. I mean, she's a well-rounded fighter that, again, can outgrind you. She can outpoint you at times. She's just a very tough, savvy vet. But in Rodriguez here, I mean, if her takedowns don't work, she's going to get picked apart. She's going to get beat up. I mean, that's what we've seen from Aguilar. Her defense is definitely getting a little bit worse. She's more hittable than she's ever been. Her takedown game isn't exactly up to par. It's definitely declined a little bit as well. And Rodriguez is one of these fighters that's up and coming. She's definitely working on everything. Probably the worst part of her game is the ground. I mean, we did see in her last fight that she was taken down. And Marcos did have some success against her on the ground, but credit to Rodriguez. She survived. She got out of some bad positions and she made it a competitive bout against Marcos and got the draw at least in that spot. But I mean, she had some moments on the ground where it was tricky for her. And like I said, she had to survive there. So, I mean, is it possible for Aguilar to get some takedowns and kind of grind this fight out? It is. I mean, it is very possible that it happens, but I think with the short notice and all the factors playing into this and with the improvement of Rodriguez. I mean, she finally, like I said, kind of made her official UFC debut against Marcos. So she got those jitters out of the way a little bit. I think she's going to be a little bit more confident now coming into this fight, especially if she knows the story here. I mean, she's facing an aging vet. I think that'll only give her a little bit more confidence, even more so, even though Aguilar is a very respected fighter. So just the scenario, how it's all lining up. I mean, I'd be very surprised if Rodriguez gets beat in this spot by Aguilar. So it's hard not to pick Rodriguez here. I mean, like I said, there is that path to victory for Aguilar. Maybe she can get enough takedowns and kind of grind his fight out a little bit. So at the current chalk right now, I would stay away from it and see how this plays out and see the progression of Rodriguez's game. But outside of that, it's hard not to pick Rodriguez in this spot. So the pick is Rodriguez. She probably wins. And I wouldn't be surprised, even though Aguilar's tough, if she batters her up enough to maybe finish this before the bell.
Yeah, basically this fight boils down to how much Jessica Aguilar has left in the tank because, you know, she was finally able to get that first UFC win, but I mean, she still has not been that impressive. I mean, she clearly, you know, at 36 years old, yeah, at one time Aguilar probably was the best, women's 115 pounder in the world, but you know, that was a long time ago. That was, before the UFC even had the division. You know, she had her run at the top and, you know, since getting in the UFC, I mean, she's just clearly been outclassed by fighter after fighter after fighter. And I don't expect that to change here. I mean, if Aguilar's wrestling's on point and she can get Rodriguez on the ground and work her submission game, then she's got a small chance. But other than that, I think Aguilar is just too hittable on the feet. She gets bloodied up against clearly worse strikers than Marina Rodriguez. Rodriguez can be a killer on the feet. I mean, she has some lethal striking. She uses her length well. She can kick. She can box. She throws combinations. I think this could get ugly in a hurry if Aguilar is unable to get this fight to the floor. And if she's not, I think Rodriguez potentially doesn't just win, but she could knock Aguilar out. So I really do think that Rodriguez has tremendous skill, and I know that she had a draw against Marcos in her UFC debut, but now that she's got that out of the way, I think that this is an easier fight, and I think that Rodriguez gets the job done. She just needs to stay upright, and she wins. Now, moving on to the main card on ESPN, we have a featherweight contest between Sodiq Youssef, who is 8-1, and Shaman Moraes, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Youssef opened -135. The comeback of Moraes at -105. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's -135 for Youssef, +105 for Moraes. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. And early on, it was all Youssef action, but now we're seeing Moraes action coming back in as well. So again, another spot where there is going to be two-way action in this fight. But it looks like as we're getting closer to fight day, a little bit more action coming in on Moraes. And I'm not surprised. I mean, Moraes is a very dangerous fighter, a very solid striker. I mean, the power that this guy possesses really, I mean, for the weight class, for 145 pounds is really something to watch out for. I mean, the guy can hit you. Not only is he good with his hands and his boxing, but the guy can hit you with his elbow. The guy's good clinch work. He can work you with his kicks. I mean, in every limb that he has power when he throws it, meaning that, I mean, he's just a well put together, physically strong fighter that if he connects, you feel it. So that's what you're getting with Moraes. He's obviously improved his takedown defense to the point where in most cases he could keep this fight upright. So he's going to do what he wants to do against most opponents, and that's beat you up on the feet. So Moraes is a very game opponent and a very difficult test for Youssef. But man, I'll tell you what, Youssef has been nothing but impressive. If you look at his performance on the Dana White Contender Series, I mean, he was really, he overperformed. A lot of people weren't expecting him to be that well. I mean, Yusuf is an explosive fighter. He's got speed. He's got knockout ability, obviously. He mixes things up well. He can push a high pace. He's got good takedown defense. I mean, there's a lot to like about Yusuf. I mean, he's a legit prospect that has championship potential for 145 pounds for sure. So I think there's a lot to like about Yusuf, but this is an extremely dangerous fight for him as well. So this is a well-matched fight for the UFC because you have two strikers that like to go out there and just put it on people, match it up against each other. So I think what you're going to see here, Yusuf is going to have the striking advantage as far as the speed factor goes. I think he's going to be darting in and out a little bit quicker, but he's going to have to be cautious because, like I said, if Moraes ends up just landing, you know, along the way frequently on Yusuf, then Yusuf could be in some serious trouble here. So I'm looking forward to this fight, a very difficult fight to bet. As the light line spiked up a little bit on Yusuf, it was definitely a value situation on Moraes. So I do think it's a dog or pass situation because the plus money on either one of these guys is the way to go. I wouldn't lay chalk. There's no way you can lay chalk against Moraes, especially in a fight like this, even though I do think Yusuf can probably edge him out in this spot here. So it's another stern test that I want to see from this prospect here, Yusuf, if he can pass it. If he gets by Moraes, I mean, he's definitely on his way because, like I said, Moraes can definitely be a dangerous opponent for a lot of people here. So I like what I see from both. It's kind of a shame one of these guys has to take an L here. I'm going to pick Yusuf, but make no mistake, this is a dog or pass situation. I don't think you want to be laying the chalk against Moraes' power, so be careful if you're betting this fight.
What I kind of find hilarious about this bout is that the fact that it is almost exclusively going to be a stand-up fight. I mean, Yusuf and Moraes, neither has ever even attempted a takedown in their UFC career. And these guys can be just extremely exciting and violent in their fights. So this should be a really, really fun stand-up contest. Yusuf is a finisher. I mean, this guy has crazy power, good boxing, very athletic and quick. So, I mean, if he can step inside against Moraes and connect with something nasty, I think Moraes could be in big trouble. That being said, Moraes is a legitimately talented kickboxer with some great Muay Thai skills. And if he can kind of stay on the outside and avoid that early onslaught from Yusuf and kind of wear him down a little bit, I could see Moraes picking Yusuf apart a little bit and just kind of slowly gaining the edge and potentially outpointing him over the course of three rounds. But that being said, I mean, Yusuf is a fighter worth getting excited about. I mean, this guy is capable of just these tremendous blitzes of violence. And I think that that could happen here. I mean, it's not a guarantee that Moraes gets knocked out because, I mean, he is a very talented fighter with some pretty good striking defense. And I think that he will be difficult to hit at times. But what's he going to do if Yusuf just gets in his face and just starts winging crazy, violently explosive shots? And that's just something that I'm really looking forward to. This is another fight that I think could be one of the better ones on the card. I'm very happy that UFC is making this the first fight on the main card for their ESPN main card. And I expect it to be really entertaining for however long it lasts. But I'm going to side with Yusuf. I think that if he does get inside and start just going to town with some big shots, I don't know if Moraes is going to be able to handle him. So Yusuf is a dangerous fighter, and I think that that finishing ability is going to potentially take him a long way. So I'm going to side with Yusuf. Now, this takes us to the light heavyweight division. We have Paul Craig, who is 9-3, taking on Kennedy Njekukwu, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Kennedy Njekukwu opened -215, the comeback on Paul Craig at +165. Obviously, I'm really savvy when it comes to pronouncing some of these names, so I'm going to stick with Kennedy in this spot here from here. That said, right now, looking over at BetDSI, we're seeing Kennedy at -190, the comeback on Craig at +150. So line merchants have tightened up a little bit. There is more action coming in on Paul Craig. As crazy as that sounds, Paul Craig getting some love here. And I'm saying that because it's just typically speaking, a lot of the diehards or whatnot, just it doesn't seem like they get behind Craig all that much as far as respect factor goes. I mean, he's a guy that's obviously had some mixed results. belt so far in the UFC. His biggest win, really, in my opinion, was that crazy comeback with a few seconds left to go against Akolov. A couple fights back, he was well on his way to losing that fight and probably cut from the roster at this point. But that's kind of saved him and got him to the spot here. With that said, obviously, Paul Craig, he does present a lot of problems for people because he does have a really good ground game. The guy is unorthodox and a little bit awkward on the feet at times as well. He's got some length. So the guy's not exactly an easy out in a lot of ways. And a lot of times when you do get some of these awkward fighters, it makes you kind of fight to the level of the competition. So I think that that's what you're going to see in Craig from time to time. But here in this fight against Kennedy, I think he has to definitely be cautious because on the feet is where Kennedy could light him up a little bit. Now, Kennedy, he's one of these guys that's obviously from a good camp. He's another prospect that is really gaining steam and momentum. I mean, he's been on the Dana White's Contender Series a couple times now, another LFA veteran as well. So he has some experience before he made his official UFC debut. And the guy's the type of fighter that really, if you look at his fight in the first Dana White's Contender Series till now, I mean, you can see the progression in his game. He's the type of fighter that takes leaps and bounds of improvements between fights. So I think this is a case where we're going to see Kennedy just get better and better. I mean, he's only 26 years old. He's long for the division. He's athletic. He's got some speed. He's got a little bit of power. He just hasn't put it all together quite yet. He's still a little raw. I'm not overly impressed with what I've seen him. I think he needs to be actually at this stage in this spot. I would expect him to be a little bit better. But that said, this is probably a good matchup where he could come in here and maybe showcase some of his striking attributes here against Craig. Craig, if he gets this fight to the ground, I mean, that's again his best path to victory is getting this fight to the ground and trying to exploit Kennedy on the floor. But I think overall Kennedy's going to be able to stuff those takedowns, and I think he's going to be able to pick Craig apart and then eventually land a shot or two on the feet that puts Craig out. So I do think Kennedy's going to look like he's improved and he's going to look the part, at least, even though he hasn't blown people out of the water recently with some of his performances. I think, again, it's still kind of a work in progress and he's going to continue to grow. So I think he comes in here and stops Craig. I think he's going to get more confidence under his belt. And again, with that physique and that athleticism that he has, the potential that he has behind him. And I should mention, he does come from a great camp. Fortis MMA is really picking up a lot of steam lately. I mean, they have a lot of good up-and-coming fighters in the UFC on the roster, so he's training at a good camp as well. They have a lot of good momentum on their side, so bright future ahead for Kennedy, but I think this could be a stern test, and that's why you're seeing the line kind of under 2-1 at this point, because, I mean, people aren't stupid. I think they realize that Craig, even though Craig isn't the funnest fighter to watch at times, I mean, he has a path to victory here, and it's a ground. So if Kennedy could keep this standing, I think he does outpoint Craig. He probably busts him up along the way and gets it done. So my pick is Kennedy to get a knockout win potentially over Craig.
Yeah, this fight's just basically going to boil down to whether or not Paul Craig can use his wrestling and get it to the floor. Craig doesn't have elite wrestling, although he does average about 2 takedowns per fight. And he does have, he's only got 30% takedown accuracy. So, I mean, that's the main thing here. I mean, if he can get Njekuku on his back, then he's in good shape. If he can't, he's in big trouble, because Njekuku is really talented. And watching this guy fight on the Contender Series, especially the most recent fight, because I think that he has improved a lot since his first appearance on the Contender Series that he won by split decision. The most recent one, I mean, he was establishing a jab. He was working his distance. He was utilizing range. And then when his opponent ducked down and changed levels, Njekuku literally just kicked him right in the face, like timed it perfectly. And he did it twice, actually. Both times that his opponent changed levels and shot in for a takedown, he got blasted right in the face with a kick. So if Paul Craig is forced to shoot for takedowns from the outside, I think he gets kicked in the face, and I don't think it ends well for him. So realistically, if Njekuku can utilize his distance properly, Craig's going to have a very difficult time getting inside and trying to get a hold of him or grab a leg or shoot for a double leg. And I just think he can get punished here. So if Craig can get it down and work the submissions, then more power to him. But I think Njekuku is going to be able to keep his distance, flash that jab in his face, and potentially follow up once Craig really doesn't start to like that. So I think this is Njoku's fight to lose. I think he gets that striking going, and I think he dishes out some serious punishment and eventually stops Craig by TKO at some point. So my pick's going to be Kennedy and Njoku. Now, dropping all the way down to the women's strawweight division, we have Carolina Kovalkiewicz, who is 13-3, taking on Michelle Waterson, who is 16-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Kovalkiewicz opened minus 135, the comeback on Waterson a minus 105. And right now what you're seeing is Kovalkiewicz actually minus 50 at DSI. So right now at DSI, Kovalkiewicz minus 150, the comeback on Waterson at plus 120. So live margins have tightened up. Two actually coming in this fight. It's another spot where Kovalkiewicz actually climbed up, and now we're seeing Waterson get some love back here as well. You know, this should be an interesting fight, to say the least. I mean, if you look at it at first take, you would look and think that, I mean, the way these girls have performed in the past, Kovalkiewicz should have a pretty solid edge over Waterson. But Waterson does present some problems here in this spot. I mean, Waterson is the type of fighter that has gotten better, especially in her recent performances. I think she's finally starting to hit her groove. I mean, before she made her UFC debut, there was a lot of buzz and a lot of hype around Waterson for good reason. I mean, the girl's a very talented fighter, very marketable fighter. I mean, a fan-friendly fighter. She's, you know, picked up a huge fan base, training at Greg Jackson's camp as well. Good camp behind her. I mean, there's a lot to like about the karate hottie and Michelle Waterson. So I just think she underperformed, you know, in the UFC for a little while. Now she's getting her groove. She seems to be physically in the best shape of her life as well right now. There's a lot of things going for the karate hottie, and I think that she's going to make life interesting here for Kovalkiewicz. Kovalkiewicz was well on her way to, I think, being, I mean, at the top of the food chain and a title contender, but Andrade obviously derailed that with a knockout win, and that was, I mean, we know Andrade has some serious power, but Kovalkiewicz usually has a pretty solid chin. So it's amazing that, you know, she suffered a defeat like that. So she's bouncing back, and we should mention that right away, you know, off of the worst defeat of her life, coming back in and taking Waterson. Now, thankfully for her, Waterson doesn't possess that kind of crazy knockout power or power that Andrade has. So I think she's going to be a lot safer in this spot here. But Waterson does have some tricky kicks. Her kicking game is probably some of the best that she has on her feet. Waterson does, and she throws them and implements the, you know, that movement and the timing with her kicks really well. So I think that obviously Kovalkiewicz has to be wary about that on the feet from Waterson. But as far as the boxing goes, I do like her hands a lot better than Waterson's. I think Kovalkiewicz is going to be the one pushing a high pace. She's going to be pushing forward a little bit and getting her hands going. Now, again, she's going to be eating some kicks along the way. And if Waterson does get this fight to the ground, I think that's what her biggest edge here is. And that's where the wild card comes into play here, because I think from top position, Kovalkiewicz could do well and she'll be all right. But I think if Waterson gets her back in a scramble or any time during this fight, then definitely Waterson can finish Kovalkiewicz. We've seen the loss to Gadella. I mean, she was able to hop on her back. Obviously a different situation. I know Gadella is a different type of fighter, but I'm saying that we've seen that weakness at least, you know, come to life a little bit with Kovalkiewicz. And I think Waterson's technically sound enough to, again, take her back, and she could probably replicate that some ways. So that's the wild card. And that's the interesting spot here, because if not, I think it'll be a competitive fight. It'll go back and forth a little bit, but I expect Kovalkiewicz to actually win on the scorecards here. I think she should outpoint Waterson, but again, not a very confident pick, because I think Waterson's improved to the point where, I mean, she's definitely at an all-time high in her confidence right now. And I think things are kind of finally going her way. So this might be the spot where she comes in and picks up one of the biggest wins, I think, of her UFC career in Kovalkiewicz here. So this is a definitely a tricky one, and it's tough to lay the chalk here because of the factors I just said. So another spot from top to bottom, this card is not easy at the betting window. I think there's a lot of competitive fights, so you guys have to be careful. And I keep on saying that fight by fight, but I mean, it's true. There's no question about it. So I think pick your spots. There's a lot of cards coming the rest of this year as well, so you don't have to go crazy on this card in particular. But that said, I think this is going to be one of those fights that if it hits the scorecards, it'll probably be another typical split decision type of fight. But I think Kovalkiewicz does edge it out, and she should more times than not get the decision win over Waterson. So I'll pick Kovalkiewicz to win, but this should be another fun fight.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, the only thing I'm worried about is how Kovalkiewicz responds after getting knocked out in her last fight. I mean, it's been a little while since she competed. She didn't look the greatest. I mean, obviously, Jessica Andrade has a lot of power. She's super dangerous, and she landed a killer shot on Kovalkiewicz and was able to get the victory in the first round. But Historically, Kovalkiewicz has been very good in the UFC. She has excellent boxing skills, and I think that that's going to be very difficult for Michelle Waterson to handle. I mean, Kovalkiewicz is somebody that has a victory over the champ, you know, Rose Namajunas. She also has beat Felice Herrig, Jodi Esquivel, Heather Jo Clark, Randa Markos. I mean, she's definitely beat some tough competitors, and obviously she's lost to some really talented fighters in the division as well. And the real question here is Michelle Waterson one of those super talented fighters? Because, you know, Kovalkiewicz has lost to Joanna Jędrzejczyk, she lost to Gadelha, and she lost to Andrade. I'd say those are potentially three of the best fighters in the division. And Michelle Waterson, while she is a top 15 women's strawweight, I just don't quite put her at that level. I think, you know, she's improving in her striking. She has excellent kicks. The kicks will probably be her biggest advantage in this fight if she can keep her distance and utilize them properly. But usually she can't. Waterson also has a pretty dangerous ground game, but Kovalkiewicz was in Rose Namajunas' guard and was actually landing some good shots and wearing her down over the course of their fight. So I'm not too worried about that, although Kovalkiewicz also did get swarmed by Gadelha. So, I mean, if the karate hottie is able to at some point get Kovalkiewicz on her back and maybe gain a dominant position or take her back or something, then maybe I'd be a little concerned. But as long as Kovalkiewicz is the one, the aggressor, then I don't see how Waterson wins this fight. Kovalkiewicz doesn't really have to worry about Waterson's power. So I think that she can press forward aggressively and just outbox Waterson. And then if this fight does go to the floor, I think it's Kovalkiewicz actually that has the superior wrestling, and she might look to take it to the ground every once in a while just to mix things up. And as long as she stays in top position, I don't think that she gets caught in a triangle or an armbar or something. I think as long as she's in control and she's the one that's imposing her will, then she'll be in really good shape. If she's not, if she allows Waterson to start using her kicks, if she allows Waterson to settle into a bit of a groove, maybe Waterson to get this to the floor and start working her ground game, then I'll be concerned. But I do think that Kovalkiewicz is talented enough that she's going to be the aggressor. So I'm going to side with her. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Josh Emmett, who is 13-2, taking on Michael Johnson, who is 20-13. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Emmett opened minus 140 to come back on Johnson, even money. Right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Emmett at minus 115, the comeback on Johnson minus 115. So basically, pick him right now. So tough fight to call. I mean, at the betting window as well, a lot of people are betting Johnson. A lot of people are betting Emmett. I mean, obviously the line has gotten a little bit tighter, so it seems like a little bit more action coming in Johnson's way across the market. But that said, I think a lot of it is due to the fact that Emmett's coming off that devastating knockout loss, and he's been out obviously recovering for over a year now as well. So, I mean, that definitely leaves a thought in your head. Like, man, I mean, he's still having complications. I don't know if you read the ESPN article or whatnot, but Emmett still from that knockout loss seems to be having a little bit of lingering effects from it. That said, obviously, if he wasn't able to fight, the commission would not let him go here in this spot, you would think. So, but it does concern me because obviously Emmett's facing another knockout artist in Johnson. I mean, even though Johnson hasn't looked like he has at 155 pounds, he's still a dangerous guy. And especially right now, if you're coming off a knockout loss and you're facing a knockout artist like Johnson, might not be the best case scenario for you. But that said, you take that away. I mean, that devastating knockout loss that Emmett suffered, man, I'll tell you what, this guy is definitely a talented fighter. I mean, on the feet, he can knock you out. He's showed that he's got knockout power. He's explosive. He's fast. He's strong. He's got good wrestling. He's got a good ground game. I mean, Emmett is the prototypical MMA fighter these days. I mean, obviously you wish he had a little bit more height, but as far as like the well put together, like strong, dominant powerhouse and with ability and technical skill set, that's what you get in Emmett. So he's been nothing but impressive overall. And even in that knockout loss that I just talked about, I mean, he was actually doing all right in that fight before that. So, That said, I'm still a little skeptical though with the state of Emmett right now. So Michael Johnson, I understand that things have been a little bit rocky for him as well. I mean, he hasn't since I think I'm not so sure that the move down 145 pounds for Johnson was the right call. Obviously he's won a couple fights now back to back as well. So it looks like he's getting in a groove, but still I think his performances at 155 pounds have been a little bit better overall. So that said, he's facing another tough test here at Emmett. And if he can get his hands off without, you know, getting blasted possibly first or getting put on his back, then I think that he has a path to victory here. I mean, Michael Johnson, again, has those type of fists that he lands on you, and he's accurate enough that he can put you out. There's no question about it. Obviously, his power has translated okay, even at 145 pounds. And this will be a test for both guys here. So that's why you're seeing a pick 'em fight. I think a lot of people are kind of scratching their heads about this. I mean, if Michael Johnson was kind of not a little bit of a decline fighter, which I think he is, I mean, maybe not fair to say, but he is. I mean, he's definitely not a guy that's a Michael Johnson in his prime. So I think even though he's still game and he's still not done with his career by far, I mean, he still has a lot left in the tank, put it that way, with Johnson. I don't think we're going to get the best Johnson for the rest of the time we see him in the UFC. With that said, it's possible that Emmett still shows us a little bit more. You know, I think that he hasn't showed us what he's all about quite yet, even though he's had some good performances. So a lot of things come into this, you know, this fight. And if Emmett could survive this fight and move on, I would like to see him get back on track to see where he can go in the featherweight division. But for me, until I see him get past this fight, I can't pick him here. So I am going to pick Johnson because, like I said, for me, it's a tough scenario coming in off of a devastating knockout loss and facing a guy that typically has that kind of knockout power that he could put you right back out. So not a confident pick because I like what I see in Emmett, but I just can't pick him until I see him get through this fight against Michael Johnson. So the pick is Johnson, and let's see how this one plays out.
Yeah, this is tough because both fighters are talented. I mean, Johnson at one point was, you know, a top 10 contender, you know, knocked out Dustin Poirier in the lightweight division. And then he went on a rough stretch where even when he dropped down to featherweight, he initially got completely overwhelmed by Darren Elkins and finished. But he's turned it around a little bit, has two straight wins now in the featherweight division, and seems like starting to settle in at the new weight class. Emmett, on the other hand, I mean, he came into the featherweight with a bang, stopping Ricardo Lamas. That's terrifying. And then almost beat Jeremy Stephens. I mean, he had him in big trouble, and then Stephens was able to rally and knock him out. And obviously, Emmett had his own issues with that fight because he had to have some surgery on his face, has not fought since that loss. So that is a concern, as Nick brought up. And while Emmett does present a serious power threat, and he is dangerous, I'm definitely concerned about his response to the knockout loss to Stevens. How's he going to go out, and is he going to be as aggressive as he used to be? Is he going to be as confident in himself as he used to be? That was a lot of damage and a long recovery from that knockout. It wasn't just a flash thing, and then he's back in the gym like the next week. So with Michael Johnson, it feels like maybe he's starting to figure it out again because, I mean, he has so much talent, and it just felt like it was starting to go to waste almost with the way that he was losing fights against superior wrestlers. And Emmett does have a bit of a wrestling to fall back on here, and I think that that could potentially be a really good path to victory for him. He also obviously does have some pop in his hands, and Johnson is a little chinny, and that could be magnified by dropping down a weight class, but so far so good in terms of Johnson's ability to absorb shots. So I'm not too worried about that. And overall, I think Johnson actually could be the better striker here with some pretty good defense and being able to dodge in and out and land some pretty decent shots. It's just the main huge question mark really is Emmett. And just with not knowing how he's going to perform that first fight after suffering a bad loss, and not just a bad loss, but a really bad and tough recovery, I have to side with Johnson, like Nick said. So I'm sticking with Johnson. I think that he probably wins a decision, but if Emmett, you know, has that same belief in himself, then he's definitely not someone you should be sleeping on either. Now, this takes us to the co-main event of the evening in the middleweight division. We have Dave Branch, who is 22-5, taking on Jack Hermanson, who is 18-4. Now, Nick, where'd you win this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
This line opened exactly at pick on minus 120 either way, and right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is minus 125 for Hermanson, and the comeback on Branch at minus 105. So more people come in Hermanson's way. I'll tell you what, I'm not surprised, because I think that, I mean, he's looked phenomenal on the ground, especially. I mean, more so than anything else, Hermanson is one of those guys that if he gets mount and he gets top position in a fight, man, he could deliver some serious punishment. And, you know, he's been on a pretty good streak overall. I know he's had a couple setbacks, but I think Hermanson's actually overperformed since he's been to the UFC, and I've underestimated him a little bit. But again, I think what's come to life more than anything else is honestly his ability to get top position on the ground and then just deliver some nasty punishment or submit people. So that's his path to victory, and he's been very successful doing so. I mean, even in the likes of Tails Lytus, I mean, I understand Mearshart has a great ground game. That was an impressive win what he was able to do. But for me, it's even more impressive that he was able to get Lytus in that bad spot and just punch him out on the ground in round three of that fight as well. So that's what he's capable of. And I mean, he could be a very dominant fighter on the ground in that regard, but he does have some flaws. I think his stand-up game is way overrated. I mean, he does have a little bit of power. He's unorthodox, so he can be tricky at times, but it's way overrated. I mean, if he can't get the fight to the floor against half the roster, honestly, at this weight class, he's going to get beat up on as far as the standing goes. I mean, he's not going to have the kind of success against most of these guys in the middleweight division, just striking with them. So his path to victory again is on the floor. Now, who he's facing here in David Branch, and why I think this is kind of a tricky spot and why people are kind of betting Branch here as well, is, I mean, David Branch is the better fighter. Branch has the better boxing in this spot. I think he's the better mixed martial artist as a whole. I think he's got, he might not have the more dominant ground game, but I think he's still got the more technically sound ground game, meaning, and I mean, I think he's even his, defense, his submission defense overall is a little bit more sound. But if he gets in a bad spot, I mean, Luke Rockhold has showed us a path to victory over David Branch as well. I mean, in his last fight, we got to mention that Cannoneer just came out and destroyed him, which was impressive. I mean, but that just says a lot, I think, for Cannoneer at the same time. But with that said, though, Branch, typically speaking, has been pretty damn good for the last, I mean, several years, even outside of the UFC with the World Series of Fighting, what he's been able to accomplish, you know, and then finally making it back to the UFC. But that Rockhold fight, what I was spinning out a minute ago, was an indicator, because I think Rockhold was struggling until he was able to get him down. And then he got position and obviously had his way with him once he did get position. So I think that's the path to victory for Hermanson here as well, is getting the fight to the floor, mounting him and ending it that way. But I think he's going to struggle doing so. And if he does, I think Branch is going to beat him up and make him pay for it as well. So I still think Branch has enough left in the tank. I think if he fights smart and does not get mounted, he wins a fight. I mean, it's basically as simple as that. It might not play out that way, but I think if Hermanson cannot get this fight on the ground and mount David Branch, he's going to lose. So with that said, I think there's more advantages that lie in David Branch, and I think he probably does get the win here. He's a better fighter, so I'm going to side with a better fighter here as well. So it's a dog or pass situation for sure, but it can't be a very confident one with, like I said, at the victory there for Hermanson's looked really good doing what he does best. And that has been a weakness in Branch's game as well. So be cautious, but it is a dog or pass situation. And I like David Branch to defeat Hermanson in this spot.
And Dave Branch can absolutely win this fight. I mean, Hermanson's been submitted before. Hermanson's been outstruck on the feet before. Realistically, Hermanson has one path to victory, and that's get takedowns, advance to dominant position, and just start raining terror on his opponent with ground and pound. And he's been extremely successful with that, especially lately. On the feet, Hermanson's a bit of a fish out of the water. He's really not a very good striker at all. And Dave Branch is a pretty talented striker. I mean, he is definitely capable. He has a good jab. Works decent combinations. I know that he got caught pretty bad in his last fight against Cannoneer, but he definitely is still a very capable middleweight. It's just, you know, don't get caught. And thankfully, he doesn't really have to worry about that against Hermanson. Hermanson just is pretty stiff on the feet. He doesn't really have a lot of confidence in his hands on the feet. I mean, realistically, he's only confident with his hands once he's got his opponent stuck on the canvas and he's on top of them. Once that happens, he doesn't care anymore and he just really starts unloading. He just can't quite do that on the feet. He doesn't have those instincts or the skills really to set up, striking combinations or maybe force his opponent to do one thing so that they're in one other spot where maybe he'll be able to land something good. So on the feet, I expect Branch to get the better of Hermanson from pillar to post, but, even though Branch is also a very talented, ground fighter, we saw in the Luke Rockhold fight that when Rockhold got top position, he was really able to, punish Branch. And, that's definitely something I'm concerned about because, Jack Hermanson, if he can get top position against Branch, Branch could be in big, big trouble. Now I kind of brought this up earlier in, the podcast, but, Hermanson looked as good as I have ever seen him, when he competed this most recently against, Mearshart. And Mearshart's a guy with a great ground game. And Hermanson just carved through that guard like butter and repeatedly advancing the mount like with ease. That's just not something most people are able to do. So if Hermanson can get this fight to the floor and start advancing through, Branch's guard, then he's going to be in really good shape because when Branch was forced to be on the defensive in his guard against Rockhold, he ended up getting TKO'd. And I feel like the exact same thing could happen if Hermanson gains a dominant position against him, because Branch doesn't really have a great chin and Hermanson hits hard. Like he's definitely up there among one of the better ground and pound fighters in the roster. So, I'm going to side with Hermanson, even though he's flawed, even though he's limited. What he's able to do right now is get fighters on their back and then either pound them out or submit them if they leave a huge opening like Mearshart did. So I'm going to side with Jack Hermanson. I think he actually gets the job done here against David Branch. Call me crazy, but I think that he overcomes the striking disadvantage, the submission disadvantage, and just that top position ground and pound is going to be all he needs. So Hermanson's my pick. Now, this takes us to the main event of the evening in the lightweight division. We have Edson Barboza, who is 20-6, taking on Justin Gaethje, who is 19-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Barboza opens minus 135, comeback and Gaethje at minus 105. And you're seeing the line basically holding steady right now. It's minus 130 for Barboza, the comeback on Gaethje at even money. So again, line margins have tightened up a little bit. We actually coming in this fight. Barboza did get bet up a little bit. And another one of the spots, like we said earlier, that the dog is actually getting some action back as we go towards fight day a little bit as well. So early action, a lot of the fans out there, bettors out there, were looking at Barboza. And now we're seeing some value coming in, for those that think there's value on Gaethje here, taking the dog money there. Another tough one. I know that it's easy to say right now. I mean, the better striker of the two, Barboza. Gaethje's defense is horrendous at times. I mean, it's to the point where it's head scratching. I mean, he's tough. He's too tough for his own good, but the amount of punishment the guy absorbs is ridiculous. So that's one thing that I'm never going to be too comfortable with, even though he's tough as nails. And I like that about Gaethje. I mean, he's the type of fighter that could take the punishment, keep on coming forward and knock your head off. But I guess a guy like Barboza, you're going to have to be cautious. So automatically you assume, especially after the last few performances we've seen from Barboza. And again, I'm not going to count the ones exactly on the ground where the dominant wrestlers were able to take Barboza down and control him and have their way with him. I mean, obviously Gaethje's not going to probably want to do that here. Even though Gaethje does have a background in wrestling, he's not that type of fighter. He's going to want to stay in the bag. He uses his wrestling in reverse oftentimes. But Kevin Lee, of course, and Nurmagomedov is what I'm talking about. I mean, those guys punished Barboza to the point where I honestly thought that, I mean, what it took out of him. I mean, it probably shortened his career that much more. The punishment that he absorbed on the ground to those two guys, I mean, was brutal. But he bounced back in a different matchup, and that's why, again, I mean, I'm not going to say that those losses that he got with those wrestlers were exactly like these matchups, because then he fought a striker hooker that was a dangerous striker that had a lot of momentum going for him, and he performed well. His chin held up okay. He was picking Hooker apart. Hooker actually play the role of, hey, I'm going to come at you. I'm not going to worry about my defense. And he paid for it. So credit Barboza. I mean, that was an impressive, impressive victory, especially after those two losses that he had. So, I mean, Barboza's still game. But in my opinion, with the wars that he's had throughout his career, it still doesn't sit right for me, even though he absorbed, he was able to take some of what Hooker dished out. Because Gaethje, I think, is a different type of animal that he's going to face, I mean, in the fighting realm, meaning Gaethje's going to come forward again. I know it's not the best IQ at times, but he's going to come forward and he's going to push through until he lands that big bomb or two and try to put Barboza out. So that's the kind of mentality Gaethje has. And that's what concerns me a little bit here with Barboza, because, again, it's kind of easy to say who the better striker here is. There's no question it's Barboza. He's more technical. He has more diverse striking attack as well. The leg kick battle is going to be interesting because we haven't seen too many people that can even hang with Barboza as far as leg kicks go, but Gaethje is another one of those crazy guys that has very effective leg kicks now. So that's going to be a little bit intriguing. Let's see if these guys start chopping each other's legs a little bit and see how that plays out. But obviously, again, a lot of the technical striking advantages definitely lie in Barboza. It doesn't matter. I think this is the type of fight where I think Gaethje is going to be a little bit underrated, a little bit undervalued here, and he's going to actually perform above and beyond expectations. I think Gaethje is going to end up landing that shot and getting Barboza out of there, honestly, as the fight progresses. He's going to have enough time in five rounds. It ain't going to, we all know that, because let me tell you something. If Gaethje doesn't end up landing that knockout blow on Barboza, then he's going to get picked apart, and eventually that defense of his is going to let him down and he's going to get finished. So I highly doubt that we see this go all that long. Obviously the total set at 1.5 rounds for a reason. So I'm not expecting this to go ultra long, but that said, I think Gaethje's going to have enough time in here to land that big knockout punch, close that gap a little bit, get inside and kind of bully Barboza. And I do trust Gaethje's chin a little bit more than Barboza, even though everything that just kind of spit out there. So with that said, I do think it's a dog or pass situation. I think there is a little bit of value at plus money on Gaethje here in this spot. So I would not lay the chalk, even though Barboza looked great. And I know Gaethje's kind of had his up and downs. And outside of that last fight with Vic, that he went in there and just demolished James Vic. I mean, you know, the two fights before that, those had to take a toll on his body as well. And his chin, the Poirier war, the Alvarez war, two of my favorite fights of all time, really. I mean, how could they not be? But that said, that's got to shorten the expectancy of his career in Gaethje, because, I mean, these guys cannot take that kind of punishment and just expect to have a long career, put it that way. So let's see how this one plays out. I think both these guys are definitely capable of knocking and finishing each other here, knocking each other out and finishing each other. But I think that more so than anything, I still do trust Gaethje. I think he's got a little bit of confidence back after that James Vick knockout. And I think right now is a good time for him to get Barboza. As people are probably thinking that Barboza has all the advantages here, I think Gaethje's going to come in and kind of surprise people, even though it's not a steep favorite here. I get it. I understand that it's a competitive fight. The line is competitive as well. I still think more people believe that Barboza is going to end up beating Gaethje up, and I don't think that's the case. I think Gaethje is going to surprise and open up a lot of eyes here and get himself back on track with a little bit of a win streak here in the U.S. So the pick is Gaethje, and there is a little bit of value of plus money on Gaethje as well.
And I really couldn't disagree more with this one. Gaethje is clearly one of the most entertaining fighters I've ever seen, but it's at the cost of his own personal health and well-being, because his striking defense is at times non-existent. I mean, he's aggressive. He's can be wild. He's extremely powerful. And he pushes a crazy pace in fights. So those are all huge positives, but, he does that with no well-being or thought for his own defense or vulnerabilities. I mean, in his UFC debut, it was one of the craziest fights of all time, but he almost got finished multiple times against Michael Johnson, and Johnson just got tired from wailing on him. And then Gaethje was able to turn the tides against Johnson as Johnson slowed down from just a really crazy tempo fight. Then he faced Eddie Alvarez, and he had his moments in that fight, but Alvarez was clearly the superior boxer and eventually set up a brutal combination that sent Gaethje down. And then against Poirier, Gaethje had his moments. He landed some crazy leg kicks, but Poirier was the superior striker there, and then eventually he just set up a stoppage. So yeah, I was ecstatic that Gaethje bounced back and got that win over James Vick, but now he's potentially facing the best striker yet. You know, Alvarez and Poirier, I don't think they hold a candle to Edson Barboza in terms of striking talent. So, with the porous holes in Gaethje's defense, I mean, I'm terrified for him right now because Gaethje could get away with his reckless abandon with his striking when he was facing, you know, the Luis Palominos of the world. And those fights were really entertaining, and he took a lot of damage in those fights even, and was getting hurt in some of those fights. But when you're facing somebody like Edson Barboza, I mean, who can just carve people up with just horrific leg kicks or spinning attacks or spinning wheel kicks that can just completely put someone's lights out with just a grazing shot. I think Gaethje could be in a lot of trouble here. I mean, he just leaves himself so open for, you know, just very dangerous and powerful counter shots with the way that he attacks. And I just think that Edson Barboza is going to really punish him here. Yeah, Gaethje's always going to have that puncher's chance, but if he really wants to win, he needs to do something that he hasn't done so far in his UFC run, and that's use his wrestling. Edson Barboza's last two losses were to Kevin Lee and Khabib Nurmagomedov because they took him down repeatedly. Edson was winning those stand-up fights, parts of the fight, but Edson almost finished Lee at one point, but those guys were able to win because they took Barboza down. They took him out of his element. And Gaethje has great wrestling. I mean, I've seen this guy literally lift people up and slam them and get a finish from that. So he's more than capable. He just needs to utilize it here because in a pure stand-up fight, I mean, it's asking a lot to hope that he lands a big haymaker before Edson Barboza is able to land his strikes. Because Barboza has, you know, he thinks about defense. He utilizes range. I mean, look what Barboza did to Anthony Pettis, you know, a former champion. I mean, he carved him up. So I think in this fight, if Gaethje does not close the distance quickly and either try to take Barboza out with a swarming attack or use that wrestling, I think Edson Barboza doesn't just win. I think that he makes a statement and, you know, maybe Justin Gaethje doesn't ever fight the same way again, but we'll see. But, realistically, I just think that this is a nightmare matchup for Gaethje and Edson Barboza wins in convincing knockout fashion at some point. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on ESPN2. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPM on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.